This is the Lo-Fi Jinx podcast for February 11th, 2010. Today, and this is Joel from HijinxAndSue.com. I wanted to talk about two shows. Leverage, which in my opinion is the most fun you can have on television. And Caprica, the somewhat spin-off of Battlestar Galactica, which is not the most fun you can have on television. So, first off, because I asked for questions from you guys via Twitter at #LoFiJinks, the hashtag LoFiJinks, what you wanted me to talk about as far as these two shows go, and you asked a lot of questions about Caprica. I have a feeling that Leverage, which, again, is the most fun you can have on television right now, I have a feeling that it's getting a bum rap and that potentially its advertising is betraying it and not enough of you are giving it a chance. And this coming from, especially if you listen to the first episode of Lo-Fi Jinx, you know that I am a very critical TV fan. I'm a very cynical TV fan. I expect a lot from my entertainment, and, you know, whatever. I guess geeks are like that. You feel sort of entitled, but because you're a geek, you feel like you're doing more than just watching. You're supporting something. You're supporting the show, so you want to get back what you feel like you're giving in, even though they're not really feeling it on the creator side. You still want to feel like it's an even relationship, and that's why shows often disappoint geeks, because you feel like you're giving a lot and then they let you down, and, you know, etc. So Leverage completely circumvents that and just delivers time and time and time again, because if you know what you're getting into, it's just 100% fun. It is not the most technically accurate show when it comes to the way it portrays technology or that would never happen in real life, that kind of stuff. It's just fun. Now let me step back and explain, because I know when I talk about Leverage in various online venues, I get a lot of, oh, I never gave that a shot because it looked campy or because it looked silly. I didn't think I could take it seriously, is a lot of the comments I'm hearing from people. And I was actually in the exact same boat. So I'll back up here. When I first saw the commercials for Leverage, it looked like sort of a campy, almost whimsical, drama-ish show, hour-long, about con men, led by Timothy Hutton. And I looked at that and thought, you know, based on these commercials, I'm not interested. And I never watched it. Two seasons of it went by, and then I realized that a blog, this is where I become totally self-serving and try and cover my own ass, but it works out in the end. A blog that has been linking to me consistently, called Kung Fu Monkey, it's kfmonkey.com, turns out that's actually the blog of the guy that created Leverage. So he, I guess, at least was or still is a reader of the comic, Hijinx and Sue. So I was like, holy crap. A guy that makes a TV show reads my comic and likes it and tells his readers to read it. I've got to at least give his show a shot so that I could reciprocate. Now, actually, got onto Netflix On Demand, Netflix Instant, which is the best way to catch up on a show. If there is a show available through Netflix, that is really the only way to get caught up on something where maybe you've missed, you know, two or three seasons, is to watch it via Netflix Instant streaming. So I watched two seasons of Leverage, or really one and a half, I guess, in like two nights, blew through it and just wanted more by the time it was over, and actually caught up to the current second season at the time and then started watching it live on TV. But here's the deal with Leverage. The basic plot is that several con men, thieves, like master thieves, master hacker, guy that beats people up, played by Christian Kane from Angel, and sort of a master planner and a grifter, all brought together by someone to do it, a big job. They're all criminals, basically. Actually, they're all criminals except for the master planner. And he's there to, like, keep them in check, I guess. So it turns out in the pilot that the guy that brought them together had no intention of paying them, and they are trying to screw them somehow. And they end up not only turning it back on him, but doing good in the end. They, instead of stealing money from somebody, they ended up giving it back, sort of a Robin Hood-esque. And so they decide, as TV would normally do, that they make a good team, and they should keep doing this. It doesn't hurt that their payout for that first episode, and I think this is really a key point, was like $30 million each. So they basically established that they were each set up for cash for the rest of their lives. Now they could just kind of do this altruistic work, and they didn't really have to worry about money, which would never happen. And this is, you know, 16 times in the pilot, are you gonna say that would never happen? Thieves would never do that, you know. But I'm getting there. So they establish they're going to be this team. They're going to look for cases where the average man is getting screwed by somebody rich and or powerful, and they're going to run an elaborate con on that guy and get their money and give it to, you know, the person they screwed over. Sometimes it's an insurance company that didn't pay on a medical claim, or it's a thug that, you know, is trying to get money out of a local business, or just various things like that. Each episode is pretty formulaic. It's exactly the same. Someone gets screwed, they take the case, and then through a series of elaborate con man work, they win and screw the guy over and get the money for the poor person. So, in a way, it could be summed up as Ocean's 11, the show. But really, the best parts of Ocean's 11. So here's where the critical, cynical geek in me takes a step back and just appreciates Leverage. Leverage knows exactly what it is and exactly what it's trying to do. And it delivers 100% of the time. Matter of fact, in all of the episodes they've ever done, I can think of maybe one where I wasn't, like, completely riveted the entire time. Here's why Leverage is so much fun. From the moment it starts till the moment it's over, it's 42 minutes, or what's the show now? 42, 46 minutes, something like that? Anyway, 40, 45 minutes of just fast-paced action, fun things to look at, such as explosions, and people jumping off of buildings for no reason. Fun things to hear, such as, you know, puns, jokes, technobabble that is reminiscent of early TNG. It just has no place in the real world at all. And it's so tongue-in-cheek and perfectly situated that it knows what it's trying to do. If you can get in that mindset and just enjoy it, it's like a fucking roller coaster ride. It's short, quick, fast. It's over before you know it, and you kind of want to get back on as soon as you get off. And if you can step aside from that tendency to be very critical and very cynical when it comes to your television, you'll realize that there is a place for this kind of entertainment in the geek world. Not every show has to be Battlestar. And I think that's where we often do ourselves a disservice and miss out on some potential entertainment value. And that we're like, this isn't heavy, this isn't deep, the characters are not layered upon layered upon layered. And then you kind of go, wait, why? Why does it even matter if I'm having fun? It took me about 3 episodes of Leverage to make that revelation that despite the fact that they're misrepresentation of technology at every possible instance is just horrible and blatant, I'm having so much fun, I don't care. Now, to sort of elaborate on that, they have a master hacker. His name is Hardison. And he's one of my favorite characters on the show. They're obviously, it's a really good ensemble, but he's a lot of fun to watch. Every time it comes to technology, it's just magical. And then you realize, for instance, he's always got like a big video wall with, you know, 6 to 10 plasma screens on it. And every time someone says, look on the internet to find out information about our guy, it's like an instant PowerPoint presentation. His medical records fly up. His police records fly up. His IDs and his credit card records, they all just fly at the screen and arrange themselves. And then they, you know, pictures of his house zoom by. And it's just stuff that would never happen. But it's certainly more interesting to look at than the real internet. You know, it would be really, really boring if you had to watch this guy doing research on the real internet. Also, you wouldn't be able to see it because it would be too small. So that type of thing. In the most recent episode, the Master Thief is breaking into a mayor's office. There's no reason for her to rappel down the side of the building by taking a flying leap Superman style off of it and then swing into his window. But it's awesome to see. So that's what they do. It's almost like a comic book, honestly, where everything's over the top and underexplained just so you can enjoy it. She jumps into his office, pops a thumb drive into his keyboard, and his computer lights up and just immediately says, copying files. And they're like, did you get the files? I got the files. What files? You know, she didn't request any files. They didn't tell her what files to look for or where they might be or anything. Who gives a shit? Because that took 8 seconds. And the time they would have used explaining, go look for these files. They're probably in a directory called My Criminal Files. And then you're going to have to figure out his password. All that time they could have wasted doing that. They spent, 5 to 8 seconds, copy files, and then she's on to something else fun. And when you look at the pedigree of the people that write this show and produce this show, you realize these are not people that are known for making crappy TV. It's just they know what they're doing. And the product they're offering, I think, is unique in the TV market that at least I have not seen a show that is just sort of balls to the wall fun the whole time and it's over. As the show progresses, they do get a little bit into character backstory, but it's mostly one-dimensional. That's fine, because honestly there's not a lot of room for that when you have to pull off this elaborate con every time. And of course their cons would never work in the real world. They really wouldn't even work in the TV world. Everything always goes exactly perfect for their cons. Even when things go bad, they turn out better than they would have had they not gone bad. So, you just have to understand that going into it and then have a lot of fun. So I recommend it. It gets my highest recommendation as far as you're probably not watching this show. You definitely should watch this show. If you enjoy kind of dialing your brain back from an 11 to an 8 and smiling for, 45, 46 minutes, you absolutely need to watch Leverage. I wholeheartedly enjoy it. Also, season finale is next Wednesday. Today's February 11th, so it'll be, I guess, the 16th? I don't know. 18th? Anyway. With the finale coming off, now's a great time to catch up on it. Either get the DVDs off Netflix, or Netflix stream it, or set your DVR to catch the reruns that'll probably be airing on TNT. But I can't recommend it enough. Also follow John Rogers, who makes the show, on Twitter. I think it's Rogers01 or Raj01 on Twitter. Google John Rogers on Twitter, and you'll find him. Also follow Bergopolis, Amy Berg, I believe is her name. Amy Bergman. Anyway, she produces and occasionally writes the show too. And a really cool thing to check out is John Rogers' blog, kfmonkey.com. Where after the episodes are done, he does sort of a director's commentary type thing where he delves into the actual production of the show. And it's just a really nice insight into how TV shows are actually made. So watch Leverage. The second thing, and the only other thing I want to talk about, is Caprica. So fans of Battlestar Galactica are probably familiar with the fact that Caprica is a loose spinoff, loose prequel of Battlestar. Battlestar Galactica, the new series, begins with the fall of the 12 colonies. It's the second Cylon War. The first Cylon War was 40 years ago. We haven't heard from the Cylons in a long time. And the Cylons being the robots that we built to be our servants and then revolted, if you're completely unfamiliar with the series. So they come back and destroy us, and then we're on the run for 5 years in space. We have no planets to call home. So I say we, like I'm from Caprica, Sam. So Caprica, the prequel-ish series, takes place before the initial Cylon War, the one that predates the current series by 40 years. I think it's like 45 years prior. So I think it's like 5 years from the Cylon War is about to happen. I think they're trying to give themselves some leeway to say, if this show gets picked up, we can either go into the fall and the, you know, the sort of the Cylon War or the revolt at least, or not. Spoilers, it's not going to get picked up because the show is pretty much terrible. So anyway, Caprica centers around the man that initially creates the Cylons, Daniel Greystone, I believe, and the father of our beloved Admiral Adama, Joseph Adama, and young Billy Adama is his son. So it's going to take place on Caprica, which is the most developed and the most New York-like of all the planets in the 12 colonies. It's the most modern. It's the most, you know, there's skyscrapers everywhere. They have crazy technology, and everybody seems to be, you know, relatively kind of futuristic. So the show begins by establishing that they're, you know, the 12 colonies, they actually worship the signs of the zodiac somehow, you know, even though that's an Earth thing. And so they worship Mars and Jupiter and Hera and all that shit. So a rebel sect, believes there is one true God, and they become sort of a terrorist organization. This guy, Daniel Greystone, who's the richest man on the planet, he has a technology company, he's kind of the Bill Gates of the planet, I guess. His daughter, Zoe, gets involved with this terrorist sect, and they end up accidentally, she doesn't know that they're going to do this, but she's with them when they blow up a train. So she dies. Well, it turns out she was kind of a computer genius, and she had downloaded her consciousness into their virtual world. So there's basically a copy of her brain and personality on the internet. Through a series of mishaps, that copy of her brain gets implanted in a Cylon robot body. The first Cylons, which are made to look like, you know, closer to the original 1970s Battlestar series Cylons than the new ones. They're, you know, 10 feet tall and they weigh a ton, and they look kind of like they have radiators for heads and engine blocks for chests and whatnot. Her consciousness is in that. So there is also a possibility that there's a sort of a backup copy of Joseph Adama's daughter, Bill Adama's sister, on the internet, thanks to Daniel Greystone. And you're kind of wondering, is she going to end up in a robot or, you know, whatever. So these two men's lives are thrust together by tragedy. Joe Adama is a crooked lawyer. He's involved with the Tauron Mafia, sort of. He's from Tauron. The Taurons in this show, they have established as a melting pot of all brown people. Just say what it is. That's what it is. They are all immigrants ever melded into one planet, which is just kind of bizarre. There are sort of Italian mafia aspects to them. There are persecuted Jewish aspects to them as far as their history goes. There are, you know, the sort of immigrant aspects of South America and whatnot, all rolled into this one super immigrant, which is crazy. And they've established that they are sort of a tough guy underclass that is not respected by the rest of the planet. No one really trusts them, and maybe with good reason, because all the ones we've seen so far are corrupt, including Joe. And then little Billy Adama is his kid. So he loses his mom and sister in the explosion as well. And these two guys end up crossing paths, and maybe we can get our daughters back. Maybe we shouldn't. Maybe it's playing God. Maybe it's not. And I'm making this sound interesting. It's actually not. especially if you like Battlestar. The show moves very slow. The pacing is just all off. It's very pretty, but the characters are... None of the characters are sympathetic. None of them. I think I just realized that. Joe Adama loses his family, and that sucks, but he's also a criminal. He's self-serving. He's a bad guy. And is he supposed to be the hero or the anti-hero? I don't know. But you don't care about him. Little Bill Adama, who we know turns out to be the hero of the human race, is on the path to being a little corrupt teenage asshole. A couple of people, I think someone on Twitter said that he should be overdubbed in the voice of Edward James Olmos, and I agree completely. How was school today, Billy?
It was fine. School was good. Dead.
So, but he skips school and he hangs out with his mobster uncle and learns how to be a criminal. Greystone and his wife are completely unsympathetic. They worked and worked and worked and ignored their daughter, didn't know anything about her life, completely abandoned her mentally until she joined a cult and then blew herself up accidentally. And now she lives on the internet. And so far as of like episode 3 or wherever we are now, they don't know that yet. Zoe, despite the fact that she's the closest thing to a victim in the show, no sympathy there either because she joined a terrorist cult. And so she's a terrorist. And you don't really feel for her problem. She died being a terrorist. Big deal. Now here's the biggest problem with the series. When I first heard about it, I heard that, Daniel Greystone, he brings his daughter back as a Cylon after she dies. And I'm like, well, this isn't going to fucking work. Because if his daughter's dead and he's famous, people are going to know she's dead. So he brings her back in a body that looks just like her own. That's not going to work. How's he going to explain that his dead daughter's back? And how are they going to explain in continuity that there are humanoid-looking Cylons, 50 years before the Final Five show up and teach the Cylons how to make humanoid Cylons? Turns out that's not what they're doing at all. She has been downloaded into a 10-foot-tall, 1-ton scrap metal body, and every time they want you to remember that inside this giant, hulking, transformer-looking creature, she's more Optimus Prime than anything else, every time the camera passes a pillar or a bookcase, it switches to show you Zoe, her normal self. This completely throws you out of the moment. You're not sure what you're supposed to be looking at. You can't disconnect the fact that in whatever environment she's in, she's 10 feet tall and she weighs a ton. But then the camera passes by and she sits down on a bed. Why doesn't the bed just crumble under her giant ass, her giant metal ass? Why? She gave someone a hug as Zoe, and then it pans back to show that she's a robot. And I'm like, well, that person is 4 feet shorter than her. They're hugging her giant metal crotch. It's ridiculous. And so this gimmick, I don't think they're going to be able to do away with this because they can't advance the Cylons any further than they were at the beginning of Battlestar Galactica, the new series, which means she's not going to end up in a humanoid body. She's not going to end up in a smaller robot body that looks any cooler or looks any more like a girl. She's going to be in this giant hulking creature through the whole series. I'm sorry, I just cannot buy it. Because at some point, it's going to have to be revealed to Daniel Greystone that his daughter is in this robot. And so he's going to have to start treating the robot like his daughter. And at no point am I going to be able to believe there's a 14-year-old girl inside, Wheeljack or Ratchet or Jazz or whatever Transformer she looks most like. It's ridiculous. And I think that is a fundamental flaw with the inception of the show. Now, here's what's weird. Now that there is a sentient robot and Greystone has been charged by his contractor people, or the people he's contracting for, to build a sentient robot to be a soldier, he doesn't know how it worked. He doesn't know how he got there. He just knows that there is one, and he's not really sure why. He tried to put Zoe in that body, but for all he knows, it failed. Turns out the program, the Zoe program, split, Half of it is now living on the chip, the computer brain, and half of it actually kind of lives inside that mechanical body. It's melded, and it cannot be separated. The chip's not going to work in their body, and no other chip's going to work in that body. So that creature is Zoe, but she can still retreat onto the holographic internet and run around like crazy. So, how are they gonna rectify that? I have no idea. Again, that even still sounds kind of cool, except that you don't care about any of the characters. You don't want any of them to win. You kind of just want to see how it leads up to the Battlestar that we know and love. You might want to see how Bill Adama develops, but at this point he's like 9. And he's a kid. He's not that interesting. I don't think they're going to be able to make him something interesting unless he was a teenager, and he's not going to be. So the good bad news is the ratings have, first of all, the show premiered against the Haiti relief special. Every other show was pulled or moved. Even the finale of Dollhouse was moved to not go up against the Haiti relief. But Caprica powered through, and I'm like, well, obviously the ratings are going to be bad. The entire country is watching this 2-hour musical telethon. But somehow the ratings for the following week were actually worse, and the ratings for the next week were actually worse, which means only the people that watched it instead of the Haiti telethon watched the follow-up 2 episodes, and it dropped off significantly each time. Because it's on Sci-Fi, and because Sci-Fi does not have a lot of, you know, dogs in the race, they're probably going to go ahead and air the whole first season, and that's going to be it. I cannot imagine it'll get picked up. I also can't imagine it's going to get that much better. The show has already shown that it's going to center around the Zoe robot becoming the messiah of the one true God religion. And I'm sorry, but that's just not interesting. There's enough religious zealots blowing things up in the real world that I don't really want to escape into robot religious zealots blowing up the fake world on TV. So I may have already answered all the questions that you guys asked on Twitter, but I'm going to go ahead and look at them. RoboGonzo says, what is Caprica? I've heard some buzz, but no synopsis. Answered. Done. Hobbsy says, what do you think the likelihood is of Ty, Colonel Ty from Battlestar, showing up at some point in the series? I think it's actually very, very high, because they've shown, if they get a chance, that they do not have a strong enough tie to Battlestar to bring those fans in. Now, here's what's weird. I read an article about how they do want to bring in Battlestar characters, but none of the timelines work. Ty, as of this series, should be rocketing through space on the Final Five ship, fleeing the original Earth and fleeing his decimated planet with his Final Five Cylon brethren and sistren, and they shouldn't actually even get into the 12 colony solar system or whatever until just a few years before the events of Battlestar Galactica. So if he is there, it's going to have to be a retcon. It's going to piss a lot of people off. I still think it's a high likelihood that they're going to try something like that. If they brought Ty in as a young man, it would ruin the continuity, but I still feel like they're going to do it. It may not be Ty because it's too big a one, but I'm sort of saying that as any of them. They've mentioned they want Lucy Lawless to come back, which is bizarre, unless her Cylon model is based on a real human, which they could write that off pretty quick, and I don't think anybody would care. But I do think they could bring in humans. For instance, Laura Rosalyn, she couldn't meet young Adama, but she could be on the show. She could probably meet Daniel Greystone, but she definitely couldn't meet young Adama, or they would know they had met before. Something along those lines, I think, would actually work out. I also believe they could introduce more parents. I think they could bring in Baltar's dad, even though he was a farmer. Maybe he shows up. I think they could also bring in, if I'm not mistaken, I think Romo Lampkin had mentioned that maybe his parents, or no, he knew Joe Adama. So maybe a young Romo Lampkin could show up, or how old is he? No, maybe not. The timeline's confusing. I really don't know what they're going to do with the timeline, but it's confusing. I still don't think there's any chance they'll get a second season. I also don't necessarily think you should watch it. If you've got better stuff to do, I probably wouldn't watch Caprica, honestly. I might even wait for the DVD and watch it all in one chunk. Because as far as waiting week to week, it's just not grabbing me. And I think a prequel to Battlestar Galactica was kind of a no-brainer, and they managed to brain it up a little bit too much. I honestly probably would have started with the first Cylon War and made a much cooler show. So, let's see, other questions. Hobbsy also asked, from what you've seen thus far in Caprica, is it a show that deserves to have been made? I just answered that. Wow, God, I'm good at this. And Mike Brady, I think he's asking me about... Maybe he's asking me about Lost again. He says, why won't Kate just die? Is there a Kate in Caprica? I don't think so. I don't know. Kate should die. She's a bitch. She's a horrible person. So anyway, so that's the end of another Lo-Fi Jinx podcast. So I guess it turns out you can't make comments on Tumblr. That's weird. Tumblr's a really convenient, really, oddly enough, lo-fi option for posting this thing. And it just makes, you know, like I said, the easier it is for me to do this, the less work involved, the more likely I'll be to actually do it. So I guess you can't comment on Tumblr. I think that's kind of balls. Maybe there's a plugin that'll let me comment. Maybe I can, you know, I think they have a Discuss plugin. Maybe I can talk to the guys at Intense Debate and see if they're going to do a Tumblr plugin. I don't know. I also want to mention that, again, if you like this little podcast or the big podcast or the comic or the forum or anything, please consider making a small donation at hijinksandsue.com/donations. Or also, subscribe to a donation at vault.hijinksandsue.com to get behind-the-scenes artwork and desktop wallpapers and iPhone or other mobile device desktops. And see the process. I post unfinished scripts or unproduced scripts, unfinished comics, rough drawings. All the original character sketches are up there from when I first was trying to come up with the comic. So check that out. I think it's a lot of fun. If you do want to support the comic, it's sort of a thank you for doing just that. Also, keep in mind that until February 20th, 5 designs at store.hijinksandsue.com for shirts are available on sale for $18, and they will be retired thereafter. So check out any shirt that's $18. One of those is going to be retired. And the Riker I Hardly Know Her shirt, at least for now, it's only going to be available until the 20th. So if you want that one, order it now. And, you know, depending on demand, maybe it'll come back. But I've actually got some other ideas that I don't want that one competing with, but I can't reveal those just yet. So, what else is going on, Hijinks and Sue-wise? I've got a really good, really well-known designer working on a new design for the Hijinks and Sue website. It's going to be less clutter, easier to read, easier to find things, easier to navigate. And then once that's done, there's going to be a few surprises. So, hopefully that'll be very soon. Thanks for listening. Thanks for checking out Lo-Fi Jinx. And also, you can find it on the iTunes now. So definitely, even if you are just downloading the MP3, if you wouldn't mind subscribing in your RSS reader or subscribing via iTunes, it would actually help me keep track of how many people are listening to the show, which would be super helpful. So look in the sidebar on the Tumblr page, hijinksandsue.com/tumblr, and there's links for the main RSS feed and the iTunes RSS. I'm left wondering, how am I going to end this thing? I wonder if I can find some sort of sound effect. to punctuate the end. That was terrible.